welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And I am joined by Thomas Hal Robson-Carnou, athlete, professional footballer and founder of the Turmeric Co., one of the UK's fastest growing health brands. In this episode, Thomas lets me in on how he manages to juggle running a business, which is growing at a phenomenal rate, with an array of enviable customers, and playing football, having just been promoted to the Premier League, scoring goals that have gone down in history. Thomas believes that turmeric can transform people's lives, and he is living proof that that is true. He's got a personal connection with turmeric, and he tells me his incredible story about how it saved his football career when he was just a teenager. He also dives deep into the scientifically proven benefits it has to health and well-being. With the number of people taking an interest in natural healthcare on the rise, which has been accelerated in light of the pandemic, he has built this business at just the right time. We also speak about his impressive footballing career, how his business pivoted during COVID, and what he's learned during lockdown. We also chat about his refreshing approach to leadership and the importance of discipline and managing your time effectively. It's an incredible conversation. It's full to the brim of value. I'm so excited for you to hear it. Thomas is a fountain of knowledge and he's got such an inspiring story. So without further ado, sit back, relax and enjoy this episode of I Shouldn't Say This But. Thank you so much for joining me today, Thomas.
Absolute pleasure.
So the first thing I want to ask you is all about your career. How have you got to where you are now?
So always had a massive passion for football. And I was a young kid, always kicking a ball around in my garden, with my granddad, with my brothers, with my dad. And I eventually got scouted for Arsenal when I was 10. Ended up joining their ranks, which was a phenomenal education, you know, playing with the best boys in the country, sort of from 10 to 15. At 15 years of age, I hadn't really grown, so I hadn't really, you know, gone through a growth spurt. So I was very small, and the academy manager at Arsenal at the time, called Liam Brady, said, you know, I've got fantastic talent, an incredible left foot, but he just didn't think I was going to grow. And to become a professional footballer, you have to have really strong physical attributes. So he said, you can begin looking for a different club, or you can stay here for another year and see how you progress. And at the time, you know, as a 15-year-old, you have no idea if you're going to have a career or not. You know, you've seen hundreds of boys come and go within that time already. And, you know, the dream is to have a career, but you don't really know if you're going to get there, although you always want to, obviously. So that security was important. So we began looking at speaking to other clubs and the likes of Fulham, West Ham, Charlton at the time, they were in the Premier League, and Reading, all expressed interest in taking me. And eventually I signed for Reading. And the academy manager was Brendan Rodgers at the time, who's now manager of Leicester and former manager of Liverpool and Celtic. And he basically said, look, you know, the route to becoming professional is getting a chance to actually play in the first team. And he thinks that I would be able to do that at Reading. And, you know, they gave me a 3-year contract at that age, and, you know, committed to it, and went there and eventually began playing internationally and, you know, forged a career in the game, which is, you know, an extremely ruthless and competitive industry.
I'm unfortunately a long-suffering Oldham Athletic fan. From a very young age, my dad's always took me to the game through the lows and the lows. At the moment, it's not great. Football grabs you, it really does, and it's something that I always keep an eye out for it. I've not been for, obviously not been because of COVID, but then also, have you ever played at Boundary Park?
Yeah, I have, yeah, a few times.
Is it me or is it just freezing whenever you go?
Yeah, I think it's the way that the stadium's built and then the location as well. I think two combined make it for a cold stadium.
So cold. Your footballing career, you've been doing it for quite a long time, but you've also set up a health brand. Why did you choose to set up a health brand?
Yeah, so when I went to Reading, they fast-tracked me into the reserves. And, you know, as a 15-year-old playing in the reserves, you know, effectively with men is quite a big step. But they were really keen to progress me into the first team. And it is a step away from playing first-team football. We were playing Milton Keynes and there was a massive defender for them, and I was quite tricky, and you know, I was doing well in the game, and I think he just thought, I'm gonna leave one on him here. So I went for 50-50 with the ball, and rather than go for the ball, he's gone for my knee, and he effectively snapped my knee in half. It was pretty excruciating, but as a 15-year-old, you don't really know what had happened. Turns out that I had ruptured my anterior cruciate ligament, which is the key stabilizing ligament in your knee, which you require surgery for. And on top of that, it means you're out of playing for at least 12 months. So had the surgery first time round, did all the rehabilitation, came back, began playing a few reserve games again, and unfortunately I had exactly the same injury, but this time it was just movement. So lost balance and my knee gave way and ended up tearing the same cruciate ligament again. And I required surgery for the second time. So all in all, I was out of football for probably about 2.5 years. And those years are really key years in your development of your career, because you're turning from, you know, children's football into adolescence. At the time of the second surgery, the surgeon said to my dad, I should probably begin looking at a different career path. And he sort of subliminally was like saying, you know, let's look at studies, let's look at some other options just to do. But I was just so determined to become a professional footballer that I just, you know, persevered with it. And I was like, yep, yeah, okay, I'm going to have to do the rehabilitation again. You know, in between, there was obviously a lot of tears, a lot of disappointment. But the surgeon did tell me that I would never play at the level that I was, you know, anticipating I would play at, and that I would also never play again without restriction and pain in my knee. Mm-hmm. So being, you know, pretty determined, I just persevered with my career. Eventually, 12 months later, got back to playing, but it was exactly what he had said. So after every training session, my knee would swell up. I had stiffness, I had aches, and I couldn't play with freedom. And so I began taking, you know, after speaking with the club doctors, I began taking anti-inflammatories, which effectively dampened down the feeling of pain and to a degree take the edge off inflammation. But it doesn't really resolve anything. And I effectively began having these like Smarties. And at the time, now the anti-inflammatories that I was taking have actually been banned because they're that aggressive on the impact and the side effects of the body. And I began having those side effects as I was taking them. So I would, you know, pass blood in my urine. I would, you know, have nausea after games. I couldn't sleep. So it got to a point where I effectively had to stop taking this medication, but I was still experiencing severe swelling, severe inflammation, and playing with restriction. And it was at that point where I said to my dad, I was like, there must be something out there which I can take which doesn't cause the side effects that I was experiencing. We went on effectively a research binge and began looking at all of these alternative natural ingredients that, you know, in parts of Asia, you know, Eastern medicine, you know, old literature, old, you know, books around spices and their compounds, and looked at all of the ingredients and began seeing some patterns in there. And it was ingredients such as, you know, pineapple, pomegranate, watermelon, ginger root, and then turmeric root. And we effectively just were like, you know, let's just try it. So we got all of these natural ingredients in their natural form and began mixing them into a blend. And within 2 weeks, we had what effectively is now a shot. But at the time, it was just like a liquor to us. But I just took it. And the first time I took it, it was like, whoa, I'd never experienced anything like that before, because my diet was, you know, very much pasta, chicken, you know, protein. And so I certainly was like, it's different, but there was no other option. So I just committed to it. So we were making these shots every few days, and I was just having two or three of them a day. And after a few weeks, I began to notice a few differences, you know, just recovery from training. I wasn't getting as much stiffness. But after about 6 to 8 weeks of having them, I woke up, went to the bathroom, went into the shower, and I realized that it was the first time in nearly 2.5 years that I had woken up without pain in my knee. And it was sort of a light bulb moment for me, still being a teenager, that the impact that nutrition can have on the human body. And so ever since then, they were my secret weapon. So I would have them consistently. You know, I began having them after training, traveling to games. I would have them in and around to help with recovery. And I began noticing that I was recovering quicker than teammates. You know, I wouldn't get run down as quickly as other teammates during winter periods. And then my teammates began seeing them, me take them, and they were like, what are they? And I'll be like, oh, it's just a turmeric-based shot. And they were like, okay, can I try it? Would give them some, and next day they'd come in and be like, what was that? Can I have like more of them? And so would give them to my teammates, and then sort of family and friends, if they were feeling, you know, a bit under the weather or had any specific aches and pains, we would, you know, just give them to them. So by the time, probably now, you know, 2016, so 4 years ago, we were making, you know, sort of 100 shots a week at home. And by this time, we had perfected the blend and the extraction process of the raw turmeric root into what is a bioavailable and functional blend of other ingredients. And it was when I was in Harrods 4 years ago, where I went into the food hall and I saw a turmeric shot on the shelf. And I was like, wow, finally, like, people have clocked on to the benefits of turmeric. So, you know, as you do, I bought the whole shelf, took these shots home, went to drink it with my dad and family, and we all nearly spat it out. We couldn't believe how inferior it was. It was made of, you know, sort of 70% apple juice. It was also made of turmeric powder, which isn't the best way to consume turmeric for its potential benefits. And there was also no bioavailable blend in it. So there was no black pepper extract, no oil, which combined helps the absorption of turmeric's active compound, curcumin, absorb in the human body. So we were just like, wow, that's what they're selling in Harrods. And what we're making at home and have perfected is just, you know, 100 times better. So we then began looking into sort of other turmeric-based products out there and realized that the market was just saturated with these products, which really weren't offering any form of functional value to its consumer. And if people now are searching turmeric, because we live in an information age, they know why they're taking it. They're taking it for specific reasons. But having a turmeric-based latte, which is sprinkled with turmeric powder, or having a turmeric shot, which is 70, 80, 90% apple juice or water, and then with zero other bioavailable supporting ingredients, they're effectively not getting what they're thinking they're getting. So it was at that time where we were just like, look, we have to bring this to market because it's a unique product and it's a unique blend. And actually, we feel that people throughout the UK and ultimately throughout the world deserve to be using this if they are looking for a turmeric-based product. So it was that at that time where we started the journey of developing the Turmeric Co. And it took about 2 years to develop the business, the back end of the business. We built a bespoke production facility, which was, again, a key decision for us because we wanted to control the quality of every single product that left the facility. Essentially, then, you know, on the front end of the business, looking at the brand, you know, looking at the sales, how does that work, understanding the logistics side. And in 2018, we launched what is now the Turmeric Co., which is essentially built as a digitally native vertical brand, all about a direct consumer, being able to facilitate through a lot of hard work on the logistics, these freshly produced chilled products to people's doors. And since then, we've really gone from strength to strength.
That's amazing. So it saved your football career, but also is now helping other people. So my dad had a heart attack 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. It's because he broke his back before I was born and he had to have surgery on it. But because his back now looks like Meccano, he's like, we call him like Metal Man. He, throughout all that time, the doctors just prescribed him anti-inflammatory because obviously he got arthritis from having all that work done. That was the thing that caused his heart attack, because the amount of anti-inflammatories he was taking started blocking up his arteries. I'm going to get him some of this because we're always looking for the next thing, because he now can't take any of those anti-inflammatories. So I can't sympathise with the pain, but I can sympathise the effect that pain has on a person, because I've lived it through seeing my dad. What is your favourite part about running a business then? Because you're going to be so busy. You've got to now split your time between still playing football because turmeric saved you, and then also running a business which is growing and going from strength to strength. What's your favourite part?
Probably sharing in the successes that we have as a team. We've built a really strong team around the business, and again, that was a core element of the process of setting it up. And we've obviously expanded the team now. You know, we have 15 employees which cover production, logistics, admin, finance, sales, and then brand and marketing. And so all of the individuals who work in the team are as enthusiastic about the journey that we're on as I am as the founder. And really what really inspires us is the impact that the products are having on people's lives. And we're just massive advocates of natural nutrition and looking at natural remedies as a form to support well-being. And, you know, we've got nearly 10,000 customer reviews of customers who have purchased the product online, used it over a period of time and have experienced the value in the products themselves. And I think when those come through, my emails are just insane. So I probably receive around 2,000 to 3,000 emails a day, depending on the volume. But within those emails, I've made sure that I always receive review notifications. So I see all of the time what every customer is saying, reading those. And if I see one which is just blows your mind, I'll forward it on to the team email chain, and everyone sees it. And I think that is probably my most favorite part of running the business. There are a lot of other parts which no one will ever see, and you know, the really tough parts, but I think the reward is there for everyone to see now, and particularly given the growth that we're now experiencing.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What's your least favorite part?
Probably the admin side of things. So I'm very meticulous, and the team will sort of know, would tell you about that about me. And so every file within the business, and there's probably over 50,000 files in our database, ranging from invoices to meeting minutes to to God knows what. And every file has to be recorded in a specific way. So date, but starting with the year, then the month, then the day, then the name of the file. Yeah, it's quite a meticulous process, but it allows us to really just drive efficiencies. And actually having to do that myself and for the files that I record is probably my least favorite part, but it's a necessary process because, efficiencies, and something I've learned, efficiencies are what drive business growth.
What has been the best piece of advice that you've ever been given? Who was it from?
You go through stages and you're always learning. And I think that's one thing that you have to be open about, is that no one is the finished article and there actually is no finish. Like, we're all just simply on a journey. And I think the sooner you realize that in your life, the freer you're going to live your life. But in terms of advice, one thing that stuck with me was my old academy manager. Unfortunately has passed away now, but he would always tell me self-discipline and self-belief. And this is sort of as a 17-year-old, and that did stick with me. But I would say as I've begun to understand more about life, I think it sort of evolved from there. But as a sort of foundation, what that message is saying is really just, if you are able to have a level of discipline where you commit to something. So, but I think the issue with discipline is that people misinterpret it, and being disciplined doesn't mean you have to be miserable. It's actually being disciplined in something that you love. So that's the first sort of key. When people talk about self-belief, automatically you can very quickly cross a line between self and ego. And so you can misinterpret self-belief and then generate an ego. But when you generate an ego, you're actually missing the whole concept of, of what, being. And so actually self-belief is more along the lines of, you know, having a level of freedom to express yourself. And if you can live in an environment like that or have an environment where you're able to do that, then those two things combined can be very rewarding.
So we're going to do some like little silly questions now because I want to get to know you a little bit better and so the listeners can get to know a little bit more about you. So are you an early bird or a night owl?
Unfortunately, I'm both. So I'm up sometimes late, but I'm awake quite early. I think traditionally I was, you know, sort of a night owl, but sort of with the work that I do and the commitments that I have, like I've, you know, sort of developed into an early bird as well. But, you know, being an athlete, rest is really important. So I think sort of as you get older, you can get into a routine and you understand sort of the amount of time that you need to sleep. And I understand that for my body, so I know the exact amount where I'm like, yeah, I can give my best today.
But then the kids get you up early.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're gonna have a dinner party, who would be your four dream dinner party guests?
I would say the first one would be Joe Dispenza. He's quite big into epigenetics and the impact of the thought processes that we think and how they have an effect on our world. Second one is Elon Musk, because he's just all around G. I think, you know, what he's doing is pretty insane. And I think his thought processes are, you know, he's thinking on a different level and probably on a different planet. And then Napoleon Hill. The author of, you know, books like The Law of Success and Think and Grow Rich. And well, I would like to sit with him because his thought processes around that were, you know, he was probably before his time. And the final one would be Eckhart Tolle. So he's the author of The Power of Now, which is, again, a book which I would recommend for anyone looking at any form of self-development. And he talks a lot about transcending the ego, and actually the ego is not us, and that we get caught in a world where we believe that our ego defines us, and that actually dictates all of the decisions we make, all of the thought processes in our head. Yeah, him as well.
There would be some good conversations at that dinner party for sure. What do you think makes a good leader?
Understanding that the people who are following you do not work for you, but actually you ultimately work for them. So if you're in a position of authority or you're in a position of leadership, then realizing that your job is actually to, whether it's get the best out of the people, you know, who are following you, or, you know, inspire those individuals. And I think those people who, leaders who understand that, are the ones who actually make a difference for the people that they're following. If a leader thinks it's all about them, then, you know, they're very quickly gonna not become a leader anymore.
How do you bring that style of leadership and thinking into the Turmeric company? Now you've got 15 employees and it's growing at such a speed. How do you bring that sort of thought process in?
I would say having a really high level of empathy and understanding as much as possible the position that each individual is in. Once you understand that, then as a leader, you can begin to look at what you can offer them to get the best out of them, rather than thinking, what can they offer me? And I think when that's what, you know, I do on a daily basis. You know, it's on any check-in, on any call, it's, you know, what can I do for you? Is there anything that you need, you know, from me that I can support? And then off the back of that, that allows them the environment to then go and flourish and, you know, execute the tasks, you know, develop on the objectives. That's that.
It'd be good to talk a little bit about how COVID has affected and changed the brand. But I think the first thing I really want to know about is the science behind, you touched on this a little bit, but the science behind the Turmeric company, because I've seen an article recently that said new research showed that it can help reduce pain felt in knees by arthritis patients. Another article suggests it's a natural painkiller, an immune system booster. It sounds like a miracle worker. So I'd love to hear the science behind why it works and what it does.
I think the first thing that, you know, we have to make clear is that it's not a medicine. So to be a licensed medicine, there are numerous regulations that you need to go through. And then you're effectively, you know, bordering into the pharmaceutical industry. That's not for us. Like, what we are advocates of is natural nutrition and the impact that that can have. Now, you know, if nutrition wasn't real, i.e. that, you know, nutrition doesn't have an impact on health, then we wouldn't need to eat food, right? So we're clear that eating food, so what you consume, can have an impact on your overall health. And so from a natural perspective, we live in a world today where, you know, as a medical industry, in terms of, you know, severe operations, severe trauma in the world, we're so advanced in terms of, you know, technological innovation and medicines that can help support recovery and support those, you know, procedures, etc. But then you sort of, where we're at now is that there's sort of a blurred line between thinking that actually that level of medication or that line of approach is a form of daily intake and a form of, you know, actually, you know, living in a way that you become reliant on that. And I think that's where, from a nutritional perspective, there is, you know, and I think the world is certainly shifting. There's more awareness towards the impact that fresh, natural ingredients, which aren't staple parts of our now traditional diet, you know, because obviously our traditional diets are relatively high in processed foods now, but that can actually have a positive impact. And so with turmeric, a lot of the studies have been around its active compounds, and one of the active compounds are curcumin. And this is a compound which there are numerous research studies ongoing, and there have been studies which have supported the impact that it can have on various ailments, issues, but it's still relatively a blurred line because at the same time, it's still not a medicine. So from a nutritional perspective, there are benefits, you know, that people would talk about, you know, such as pain relief, such as anti-inflammation, you know, such as, you know, helping boost various functions in the human body, such as recovery. But we're still so early in terms of that research on the actual ingredient and its natural compounds that it's still so early on. So we can't declare it as a medicine, and we don't want to. We want to declare it as a natural food, which is beneficial to everyday life. So
yeah, and 2020 has been the strangest year across the board. Like, it's been a year of change. How have you fared? What has it done to your brand? Because I believe that you're doing all right. Things seem to be going quite well.
I think when we were looking at setting up the business, it was like, how best do we want to serve our customers? So as a business, you can either go down a route of retail or you can go down an e-commerce route. And the majority of beverages, FMCG, you know, consumer packaged goods brands will immediately upon launch focus on retail. So they'll want to get into, you know, all of the high street stores, you know, all of the health shops, you know, try and break, you know, into the multiples, you know, the supermarket chains. Whereas when we launched, we went down the e-commerce route. So we built everything as a digitally native vertical brand. So it was all around that consumer experience. And the best way I can define a consumer experience is Apple, you know. So when you buy your first Mac or your first iPhone, that whole experience of opening it, using it, you know, they developed that for you as a consumer. And so we looked to that and we took inspiration from that. So that was how we built the business model. So a lot of the logistics in terms of, you know, being able to supply throughout the UK, these, freshly produced chilled shots in a chilled condition to houses, you know, throughout the UK. Like, that is a logistical nightmare, but it's something which we worked extremely hard on. But to deliver that within 24 hours, you know, and within 24 hours of order as well, we obviously were able to do that. And as I said, it took, you know, 2 years to really build that infrastructure to a level where we could facilitate the, you know, the potential demand, which we surpassed very quickly, you know, once we launched. But because we went down that route and we didn't go down the route of retail, although we were stocked in, you know, we are stocked in the likes of Whole Foods, Planet Organic, you know, 100 independent health stores throughout the UK, various cafes, that wasn't our business model. So when COVID-19 hit, all of retail, apart from superstores, shut down. I'm quite good friends with, you know, a beverage-based brand, and 90% of their revenue came from supplying cafes with fresh juice. And they were, you know, big, you know, doing sort of seven figures in terms of volume, in terms of revenue. And overnight that stopped because cafes were closed and they got hit really hard. And on the other hand, because we were set up in an e-commerce way, all of a sudden we had, you know, the whole nation at home, you know, on social, you know, with their digital technology at their fingertips, but also all of a sudden extremely conscious around health. And so at that time, because we had scaled really well over the course of 2019, when we launched, every single ingredient that we have is really high quality. So it's the best of the best. So with that comes price. So throughout the whole of the 2019, the price point of each shot was £3.50, so very premium shot, and yeah, but you know, so really, it wasn't competitive to, you know, for every single person in the UK to begin using it. But where we grew in 2019, because of the economies of scale that we experienced as a business and the improvement in our efficiencies of production, supply chain, etc., we were able to experience dramatic cost savings. In terms of the cost of goods. And we immediately, at the beginning of 2020, passed that on to our customers. And so our price point of shots went from £3.50 to £1.99 almost overnight. That was literally probably 3 weeks before COVID-19 hit. So all of a sudden, you know, we had this, you know, it was for out of an extremely difficult situation as a business and what we were trying to offer, you know, in a force of goods, you know, a force of change around health and nutrition. You know, we were able to turn what was a very dark cloud and, you know, pull a silver lining out of it. And, you know, our demand and volume and output went through the roof over, you know, sort of a 2-3 month period.
What do you think it was that people saw around it? Where do you think that demand came from?
I think it's just, as I said, a lot of the work that we do, so in terms of, you know, marketing, the communications that we put out is all around education. And as you said, our biggest thing, you know, what our North Star is, you know, simply natural nutrition. And it's like, how ultimately, like, if we can educate customers and audiences on the impact that natural nutrition can have, you know, on your everyday well-being, then we're going to drive demand in what is a extremely high quality but convenient natural nutritious shop. So so I think that level of education and that understanding and that awareness of, as I said before, being in the information age where anyone can search turmeric benefits or, you know, turmeric, or and they're going to be hit with a plethora of information. And you know, off the back of that, we've obviously seen a, you know, really a dramatic uptick in demand.
What challenges have you faced? Has it been tough to, like, deliver that fresh, cold shot throughout COVID when everything does shut down? Was that a challenge, or were you okay and you were set up ready to go?
Yeah, it was a massive challenge because although we had the demand on the front end, you also have the issues of the supply chain on the back end. And a lot of suppliers and the logistics of, you know, bringing fresh, you know, ingredients into the UK and around the UK were affected. So one thing that we did, we invested heavily in our stock levels. So, we bought, normally we would hold within the business, 6 weeks worth of stock. But what we did, we very quickly bought in, 3 to 4 months worth of stock across all product items. Whether that was boxing, packaging, insulated liners, or whether it was, the fresh goods, and with goods which, obviously would potentially go off, we had to effectively, get as quickly as possible agreements in with suppliers that they could facilitate that level of demand. And again, because we had built relationships with, all of our suppliers, and we really took that level of care as we set up to make sure that, that they have similar, ethoses to us as a brand. We were just in a position where we were able to facilitate that. And yeah, so, but that was a big, big challenge. And again, and anyone who runs a business will understand the impact of cash flow within the business and the impact of stock holding within the business. So that changed all of our numbers over a period. And, it was a big investment for the business, but it was, an investment which we had to make, and, obviously paid off because we were able to maintain the demand. On the front side of things, the delivery and the logistics, they were experiencing insane demand because everyone was at home. Everyone was ordering, items, goods. I think Royal Mail was backlogged by 2 weeks. So again, on that front side of the logistics, in terms of fulfillment, we made sure that our partners were still able to maintain that distribution. And I think, with a bit of luck, we were in a really good position.
I'm so pleased that it's worked out so well for you, that leap of faith, over investing in product, having the faith to know that you will fulfill those orders is it's brave, but it's obviously paid off. People are clearly investing more in their health and fitness and nutrition. We've just touched on it in the light of the pandemic. Do you think it's going to continue when hopefully this is all over? And do you think you'll continue to see? Are you forecasting strong sales moving forward?
In terms of the whole health, conscious element, I think the world has changed. I don't think there's any going back to what would be normal. So I think this is our new normal. And I think regardless of what happens with COVID-19 moving forward, fingers crossed, that it resolves itself. And eventually, as a civilization, we pass this, as the previous sort of viruses that have come into the world that we've done before. I think the impact that it's had on everyone, I think everyone now has just been shifted. There's been a shift, and I think that is certainly here to stay. And a lot of the work that we're doing is, continuing to drive that growth. And, we were on a phenomenal growth trajectory before COVID-19. And I think simply because we were able to facilitate the demand, we saw, a crazy spike and increase. But actually now it's looking at how we can, continue to educate users. Like, we're servicing, I would say, potentially now, less than, 1% still of our, total available market within the UK alone. And off the back of that, we're seeing a crazy level of demand in the range. And, last month we distributed just over 300,000 shot bottles throughout the UK. And it's, it certainly is demanding and busy. But as I said, we're seeing, there's a massive feeling of gratitude and, the reward of being able to get this product, which is, a high quality product, which I used, I've used pretty much, half my life now, is really inspiring. And I think in terms of, moving forwards, there's the opportunity. There's so many opportunities where we want to take the business. But as I said, it's, for me, it's, as simple as making sure that the files are recorded in the correct way and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah. It's because it's grown so quickly, like probably quicker. As you say, you had a great trajectory forecast before COVID, and then COVID hit and it's just blown up. How have you found managing it? Because obviously you've still got football training. Now you're back playing again. How are you managing everything?
I would say firstly, a phenomenal team. The personality of any individual who comes into our team is the most important thing. So I would say, how do I manage it, with a great team? How do I actually manage it sort of for myself? I would say, I'm relatively good at compartmentalizing things. So, when I'm up in the morning, I travel to training and I commute to training. So it's a 2-hour drive, but I will work in the car. So I'll be in the passenger seat and I'll have my laptop open. I'll be reviewing, the end of close of the day before, catching up on all of the emails from the evening before. And then by the time I get to training, which is sort of around 9 o'clock, I'm ready to train. So I'll go through my routine, an hour's worth of, stretching, warm-up exercises, gym work, then onto the pitch, 110%, I'm 110% trainer. I give my all every single session. And then when I'm off the field again, we'll leave training sort of afternoon and we'll be in the car again for 2 hours and, we'll work, catch up on the emails throughout the day, catch up on the team with the relevant departments in the team. And then, then sort of by the time I'm home, I'll spend time with my family, with the kids, give them three hours and, they'll be back from school and get them into bed. And then from 7 o'clock onwards, then I'll work into the evening and, sort of finish around sort of 11:30. But I think actually a lot of people sort of, look at football and it's such a physically demanding sport. And from a psychological perspective, there is massive pressure. And again, you look at mental health. Mental health in football is so underreported that it's, it's sort of almost embarrassing. And what I believe is that, a lot of those mental health issues, spur from, players not having a release, not being able to switch off from the game. So for me, I found that having an active mind and being able to do things outside of football has helped me to actually perform better when I'm on the pitch. So I use, football as a physical, stimulation, and then I'm able to use the work and building a business as, a mental stimulation. And I think that actually has a really strong benefit to people's lives. And, other players will sort of, and there's no harm in this, we'll go home and play FIFA from, sort of 3 until 1 in the morning. So I just choose to, process emails and speak with my team. So it's sort of, no different.
I know now why you're an early bird and a night owl, because you're trying to cram all that into your day. What's it been like playing without any crowd? Because you can't hear that sound that they dub over on the TV. And is it weird?
Yeah, it is. I think like every player now in professional football will realise, if they didn't before, how important fans are in the game. Because it is a complete difference. The buzz before the game, the roar of, even making a good tackle or intercepting a pass or, let alone scoring a goal. The difference is, literally night and day. And I think from my perspective, certainly the sooner the fans are back in the grounds, the better. And hopefully it will be soon. But given everything that's sort of happening and rumbling on, it's, it's not looking likely.
No, it doesn't look likely, because they've moved everything back again, haven't they, which is a shame. Just going back to the pandemic, have you done anything to support the community in the country during the pandemic that you're especially proud of?
Yeah, definitely. So at the height of the pandemic, sort of around April time, we began supplying, care packages to NHS workers. And that was really rewarding, because a lot of these guys were working, crazy hours on crazy shifts, and actually to get them using the turmeric shots and have them, on supply was, really amazing, especially given the feedback that we got from them. So, we sent, several thousand shots to the NHS, to various teams where we had a connection with, we knew one of the members of staff. And and then also during over the whole period of COVID and lockdown, we also did a discount on any orders from NHS staff, which was quite hard and pretty hard to deal with logistically, because, we sort of had just people who I don't think were NHS staff, you know, or emailing in saying, oh, I'm an NHS worker, can I have, you know, the 50% discount on all orders? So, but that was really rewarding too. And so, yeah, those two things are probably, you know, two of the most pleasing things that we did.
You've touched a little bit about the marketing strategy and it being around education, so people know a little bit more about the product and that side of it. But how important is social media to your marketing mix?
It is obviously massive because it's where you can communicate to audiences in their living room effectively. And so a lot of the work that we've done on social, you know, we've actually incorporated a strategy of involving, you know, users of the brand. So, you know, whether it's elite athletes or, you know, sort of Mary from down the road, you know, who's sort of in her 60s, like we've tried to document their stories and their own journeys. And we've seen some really strong traction around that. And, you know, I think it's just having that sort of personal, you know, that real life aspect of the brand, I think has, you know, really seen some really strong engagement on our socials. And that's probably, what we've done to date. But moving forwards, we've got some insane, you know, really exciting news and developments and things that we're working on, various partnerships with some high profile sports teams, quite a lot of partnerships in terms of individual athletes, and then also we're going to run a campaign specifically focused on our customers. And it's the way that we built our social is, you know, obviously with such a demand of our range from athletes, you know, athletes are pushing their bodies on a daily basis, so they're, you know, very aware of nutrition, so they know they've eaten something good, they're going to feel good and they're going to perform better. So because of that, we've, you know, been able to leverage, you know, them using the product. And, you know, we supply several Premier League football teams, you know, we supply several rugby league and union teams, we supply a lot of international teams, you know, a lot of GB athletics, athletes. But actually, the demographic of our subscriber, and we've got over 10,000 monthly subscribers, is 35 and 45 plus male and female. So actually, it's fascinating to realize that it's the everyday person who is now using the product and is now experiencing the benefits and the value of moving towards natural nutrition. And for us, that's, you know, it's amazing because that's ultimately who we want to be using it. Obviously, it's fantastic having, you know, the best players in the world, you know, best footballers in the world using our shots, you know, whether that's at Melwood or, you know, at wherever it is. But actually, what is the biggest impact is, you know, an office worker, a fireman, a teacher using the products on a daily basis and actually becoming educated on natural nutrition and becoming advocates of it too. So yeah.
And do you plan on introducing any new products anytime soon?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, so in terms of new product development, there's some exciting progress being made of product variations, not in shot format. One thing that we've looked at was like we've probably had at least two of the new products available, you know, that we could launch probably for the last 12 months. But we know that as a brand, we are still very much in our infancy. And so really, from our perspective, the key for us is educating our audience. But, you know, when you have a product offering, if you make that so wide and so diverse, sometimes it gets too confusing for the consumer. So what we really know is that we've got three products which are phenomenal products, and we want to drive as much awareness on, you know, not only turmeric but the range and the impact that they can have on regular nutrition. And as we begin to see, you know, wider audiences using the product and becoming educated, you know, opening up to new markets, then I think will be the right time for us to launch new products. So, yeah, it's certainly exciting, and there's a lot to come, but we're just working day to day at the minute.
Working day to day and playing and not sleeping and it's crazy how much you manage to fit in your day. So that was a bit about the company, and especially over COVID, but how have you felt the past few months have been for you personally? Because obviously the football finished, and then there was that, it just early as well, didn't it? The football season finished early. And
from my perspective, it was good because I maximized my time, really. I was able to really focus on, and spend a lot more time than I would usually spend on the business. And then also, being able to, spend every day with your kids is, very unique. And when, I've been a professional footballer now for 14 years, and, you don't get Christmas Day off. So you train Christmas Day, you'll have a game on New Year's Day. You get sort of 4 to 5 weeks, off in the summer. And usually the kids are at school during that time off. So actually being able to spend more time with the kids was, really special as well. And, tried to make the most of that. I think it was difficult, and people throughout the UK and obviously throughout the world have really suffered, and not only in terms of the economy, but on the mental side as well. Being cooped up inside and having limited access, and even now it's you'll be experiencing it because everyone is, and the interactions now that you have with other human beings is limited. Even when you're out now, people you see, they're wearing masks, so facial expressions, you look at kids now, the biggest learning that kids experience is sort of the facial expressions that someone makes, and that anyone who's a parent will know, because you can give them a stern look and they'll stop doing what they're doing. So but all of a sudden now they'll be walking around, whether it's in school or outside of school on the street, and people are wearing masks. So we're beginning to lose that level of interaction. So times are changing.
They definitely are. And it's not been easy, has it? What's been the hardest thing for you? So I'm like you, I enjoyed having that bit of time back, and I enjoyed having not the so much the chaos that was running. Mine's slightly different, but my commuting and then rushing through my day and then commuting home, I enjoyed having that bit more time. But it has been tough, living and working in the same space and not being able to see your family. And what have you found has been the hardest part?
The hardest part, I would say, that interaction with people. So now, as a team, obviously my routine is pretty intense, but I would always meet with various members of the team over the course of the week. Now that doesn't happen, so everything is online, and it's everything's digital. So even this podcast now, when we first started thinking about it, it was like, well, let's do it in the studio and have that personal relationship with people. And I'd say that's probably the biggest thing on a personal level and business level, which is the hardest to deal with, really.
The last bit of my podcast, obviously my podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because I quite often say things that you wouldn't expect a managing director to say, and that's the reason why we started it, because I want to open the floodgates a little bit and open up what it really means to be a managing director, so it doesn't seem so unachievable to people. So I've talked about anxiety, I've mentioned my imposter syndrome, fear of failure. With that in mind, would you mind doing me an admission submission?
It took me time to realize this, but I think everyone experiences a level of insecurity, and everyone has voices in your head. And growing up and living in in a world, I had those as much as anyone else. But I think the biggest thing that changed for me and understood, that I began to understand, was that it's your decision. So for all of the barriers that may be present in the world, because of the world we live in today, there's this misconception of entitlement, and I fully believe that destroys the access to the wealth of opportunities available. And somehow that ideology needs to change, and I think that ideology is something which I don't resent it, but I think that is the biggest challenge, you know, and hurdle in the world that we live in today. So just understanding that whatever you're doing is your decision. And it took me a long time to realize that. And, you know, once I did, I was able to, you know, live my life to the fullest.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It was absolutely fascinating to talk to you. And I wish you all the best with it. And I can't wait to see the new product development, the new things you're launching. And I wish you all success in the world with it. It's fabulous.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Katie. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks.